Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now to 710-710. Try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hi, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, I don't know if you were aware of this, but the Lions lost last night.
I know
you thought they were going to win, but they
didn't. No. Yeah. I thought they were going to lose.
We know, John, because you said you don't even need to play the game.
Don't even need to play the game.
And you know what? When it was 7-0, John, I was going to call you and go, in your face, professor!
Well, what about when it was 17-14?
Yeah, it was actually
then it ended up 35-17.
It was a good game for a bit.
But again, they're terrible. I mean, it's like you can see that, you know, they're weak on the cornerback position. You know, they're now down two of their top three cornerbacks. That's not good.
Do they have a running back?
Not a good one.
Their leading rusher was Jared Goff last night.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift, who they, I think it was a second-round pick last year, second- or third-round pick, and he didn't do much. And, you know, they cut Kerryon Johnson. So running back, no, they don't really have much there. So that's not good. And, you know, wide receivers, I mean, they let, you know, Marvin Jones go, Kenny Galladay go. I mean, you know, again, what we're – and again, I'm not saying that they're poorly run, but the way that – they're not like Houston, but what they did is that they broke this team down. And when you break a team down and get rid of that much talent, it's going to be hard to win. And certainly, you know, they it was 38-10 in the early part of the San Francisco game. And, you know, when San Francisco started losing their defensive backs, they were able to rally back and make it an 8-point game. Well, in this game against Green Bay, once Green Bay decided, hey, we do want to play football this year, then it wasn't close.
Yeah. So is it, how do you judge Jared Goff in when he's surrounded by this, I guess, lack of talent? You know, he played pretty decently for the most part. He did turn the ball over with that fumble. That fumble was a killer. But ultimately, you know, I'm wondering how much slack he and the head coach have, considering you're identifying what I assume most around the league know, that there's just not a lot to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's probably better right now than people think, you know, because say what you want, you know, when he was with the Rams, he did go to the Super Bowl. Now, they shut him down totally in the Super Bowl with Bill Belichick's defense and the Bears' type of defensive line that they use. But overall, I thought that, you know, he did some good things. But when you don't have the talent, I mean, we watched that with Matthew Stafford. And he's not as good as Matthew Stafford because say what you want, you know, Stafford at times was able to take a bad football team and get it to the playoffs. Didn't win a playoff game, but he got him to the playoffs. In this case, you know, particularly with the team that's around him right now, and I don't know how long they'll stay with Jared Goff, but it's just going to take a couple years, 2-3 years, to be able to build things back.
Professor, did you by any chance see the Eli and Peyton broadcast?
I didn't. I was more interested in just watching the game, particularly with the way the game started, you know, because, you know, I just when you see Detroit get up to a lead and then you see Green Bay struggling like they did, and Green Bay's defense is not good. I think that you can see that. So I was more interested in the game. But you know that Eli and Peyton are going to do a great job. I mean, I think what the ratings were up to like 1.8 million or something like that, which is almost like 50% more than last week. So it's going to be good. But I was more interested in the game than Peyton or Eli.
See, I wasn't interested in the game at all. So I went and listened to those guys. And, you know, like Schlereth was just telling us, are they sort of cannibalizing themselves at ESPN? Because it was on ESPN2.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how many. I wonder how many of those are new viewers that wouldn't normally watch a game, but they tune in because of those two guys, you know.
Hard to tell. I mean, because that's the one thing that, you know, kind of needs to be figured out, because if you're, you know, ESPN, you have the games on ABC, so you get an audience there. You have the games on ESPN. You now have Peyton and Eli on ESPN2. And so, you know, and then of course you got streaming and all that stuff. So there's a lot of things going on, but, you know, I'll have to sort it out. The ratings will come in later today. Maybe it probably already have, and check it out.
Yeah. And John, are you one like me that thinks Peyton Manning's hilarious?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's always been that way.
He's really funny. And then his little brother's giving him a hard time about the size of his head. There was the whole thing about, which this is an old joke for, that I've heard ever since I got in the league, but it was like, would you rather have $10,000 or Peyton Manning's helmet full of quarters?
You know? Wow.
So, yeah, there was a lot of that going on.
What'd you think of the shot at the Patriots?
Oh, yeah, he did. He took a shot. He said something about how the receivers, you know, he told his receivers, was it when they played in New England? Yeah, that they would go back in the shower.
Yeah, no, it's when he would be at home, because I think in one of the Super Bowls, the Indy Super Bowl, New Orleans was there. I mean, New England was there.
Oh, in Indy.
Yeah, in Indy. So it's like, and he says, you know, I've told all the receivers, it's like, hey, if we want to talk plays, we'll have to go into the shower, because I'm sure that Bill Belichick's put some kind of a sound device in there to be able to pick things up.
Isn't it amazing
how paranoid he made the rest of the league? I wonder if ultimately that was his goal, or how much truth there was to any of this.
That's what he loves to do. I mean, you see it at the owners' meetings, because he'll come up with, rule changes, and basically the rule changes benefit the Patriots.
Well, you know, I would say this, having talked to some fairly high up people in the NFL, the thing that they say is that there's always smoke, you know, there's always smoke. Like, you know, there was a rumor.
They're saying there's a fire there.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a rumor that the interception that Russ threw on the 1 yard line against the Patriots, that they were running that play at their practice, their scout team was running that, and like they hadn't shown that all year. Like they had not run that play on the goal line, and it looked like Malcolm Butler knew that was coming. There's just a lot of little things like that kind of go along with that. Nothing terribly egregious. I mean, I get the whole thing about trying to hide the inflation of the football. But as far as inflating it or deflating it is ridiculous, because it doesn't matter. Nobody could tell the difference. And take it from me. Yeah. Take it from a Hall of Fame quarterback. Warren Moon said the range there between whatever it was, 12 PSI and 16, he's like, you could not tell the difference between. So it was just a little bit of a preference thing. It wasn't anything cheating. It's just that they tried to hide it. They tried to cover it up, and that's what, you know, kind of continues to add to this whole legend, I guess. What were you going to say, John?
Sorry. Yeah, what I was going to say is that, on the play at the 1 yard line, they practice it 7 or 8 times during the week. And, of course, one of the keys to the play is to make sure that, you take out the main receiver.
The blocker.
Yeah. And, again, it's like, who did they have on him?
Brandon Browner.
Yeah. How many times do you think Brandon Browner's run that play in practice?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the bad part about that one. But, you know, getting back to, Spygate and also all the other things that have happened. I mean, I still remember, you know, when they got caught for Spygate and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I get this real strange email from somebody who X'd out, you know, it's all X'd out as far as, you know, where it comes from, you know, and all that stuff. And so, yeah, you can't tell who it came from, but it came from somebody in
the Illuminati.
Yeah, no. It came from somebody who used to work in the Patriots front office, because I know Chris Mortensen and a whole bunch of us, you know, got these emails. And basically what it did is explained how they all set this thing up. And so, because what they did is that, they'd have, the photographer, trying to, make sure that he picks up the signals from the sidelines, and then he tapes those. And then at halftime, he would then meet 2 or 3 coaches in the side. And then next thing you know, that they're getting the word upstairs in the press box to the coaching staff. And then being able to say, okay, if this happens. And then, of course, the other thing was they would have the frequency guy, particularly in home games, be able to go ahead and get past the 15-second. The 15-second mark in the to the quarterback, and so that all of a sudden it's like, if you see this and you can read the play, then you can go to Brady, Roger five, meaning okay, there's going to be a blitz coming from the right side, and so he can pick that up, change the protection, and then get the pass downfield, and they did that all the time. And so they had that going, and the frequency thing going, and a whole bunch of other things going. I mean, again, they would send the people from the Patriots to the hotel, the visiting hotel, just to see if there's any kind of play sheets
in the garbage and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's like Animal House.
Yeah, yeah, looking for the test.
Going through the dumpsters and to look for the...
Yeah, but they were so successful that, basically Bill Belichick banned Bob Kraft from coming into the scouting office, because all of a sudden you had all these different, references to other teams and different things like that. And so, and I still remember Carolina, they're in the Super Bowl against them, and they basically said on Saturday that the photographer was able to, shoot the walkthrough and the snaps and all that stuff, and they were able to incorporate that into the games.
So you're saying all of the paranoia is warranted.
Oh, yeah. That's why he's called Bill Belichick.
Yeah, well, yes, he is. He certainly is. I'm not going to sit here and defend him, certainly. Hey, a couple of questions from the texters here. The 425 says, Professor, what do you think of Trey Flowers so far compared to previous seasons?
Better than most of the people in the city. I mean, right now, I think they want to run him out bad.
I think you're right.
And, you can see with, what Pete said yesterday, that he must be thinking in the back of his mind, maybe there is a time to make a change, because, he says that, DJ Reader and also Trey Flowers, well, they're battling. Well, that battling doesn't mean they're succeeding. I mean, I think DJ Reader is, but, Trey Flowers made a couple bad plays on Sunday, and it cost him big time. And so, now you wonder, I mean, you got Sidney Jones, you got, Austin, you got Bless Austin, and, what other options that you can see. Trey Flowers is Trey Brown is about a week away. So he should be back next week. So it's like those options are there. And, of course, you're going against a passing type of team in Minnesota. So we'll see where that goes. And, of course, the next game is so important because it's a Thursday night game on a short week going against the Rams.
Yeah. What do you think happened with Marquise Blair? I thought we were going to see more of him. Mm-hmm. He didn't have very many snaps. It looked like they went with Amadi. Ugo was out there quite a bit, but the one thing that he brings, Blair, is a physical nature and to that defense. And John, I mean, it's early, and we're talking about overreacting. What did I say the number was, Bob? They're giving up 434 yards on defense right now each game. So in those two games, all of a sudden, that's one of the things. They've over the last few years they've bled yardage, but they've been able to make big plays. So, that's the one thing I think that's missing. I mean, they're getting a pass rush, but remember in 19, they had more turnovers than anybody in the takeaways, I should say. Mm-hmm. 32 takeaways, I think. And, they were like, 27th, 28th in almost every category. Got to start taking the ball away if they're going to give up that much yardage.
Yeah, but look league-wide. I mean, you're seeing so much of that because, we're normally, when you start a season, it's supposed to be, defenses ahead of offenses, and that's not the case this year because, look at the number of points that the Rams have given up. I mean, this was the number one defense in the league, and it's not anywhere close right now, and that's not even going against a Chicago Bear team in the first game of the season. You've got Tampa Bay. I mean, they're giving up more than 25 points a game. I mean, look at the way defenses are right now, and so many of the good teams with the supposed good defenses are struggling. Now, you can't say that about the Denver Broncos, but heck, they played, Daniel Jones and the New York Giants, and they played a Jacksonville team that's just pathetic, and then this week they have the New York Jets. But, a lot of the good teams with good defenses are giving up points and yards.
Well, when you look at Carolina leads every single statistic defensively, but they played the Jets and then they played Jameis Winston, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they blitz like mad.
John, the 509 is asking which of the 2-0 teams in the NFC West are real contenders and which are pretenders?
Well, I mean, I still think that Arizona's more of a wild card playoff team, not necessarily a Super Bowl contender. You can still make the argument, depending on where they are on injuries, that San Francisco's in there, but Seattle and the Rams are definitely in that mix.
Christian McCaffrey, I just mentioned Carolina. Good to have him back. I mean, I think that's good for the league as well, but what did he play in, three games last year, John?
I think
they lost all three of them, and so, it's good to see him getting back in it out in Carolina.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it, because he's such a good back, catching the football, running the football, the most complete back in the game, and it just makes their offense so much better. And so, and right now, when you look at the seven teams with 2-0 records, I mean, Carolina is now emerging as the surprise team. You know, because they're 2-0. They've got the defense is playing great. I mean, they got McCaffrey. You know, they've got a couple good receivers. Offensive line's not bad. And you know, Sam Darnold is okay, but right now he's 2-0.
Hey, John, I was looking at a headline. I think it was ESPN that basically said once the Bears, and once they turn to Justin Fields, there's no going back. And I've heard that in relation to other young quarterbacks, whether it's, you know, with the Jets and Zach Wilson, hey, you went with him, you got to stick with him. Why? Why? Yeah, if a guy's out there struggling, let's say they turn to Justin Fields and he has a bad stretch, I don't understand that logic, but you hear it a lot that, well, you make that decision, you got to live with it. No, you don't.
No, you hear it from the fans, because the fans don't
these
want
are,
it.
These are writers that I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's like they're the writers and also the fans. Because, you know, they had the press conference on Monday. Matt Nagy didn't say who he was going to start at quarterback because he was still waiting to find out how bad it is on the bone bruise for Andy Dalton. But what ends up happening is that, he had to send a PR guy back in the room and said, hey, listen, when he's healthy, Andy Dalton's still the starter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, John, Bruce Arians down in Tampa Bay starting off the year just like he did last year, criticizing Tom Brady. Remember early on against was against New Orleans. Yeah, he was on him, and he was saying that there was a strip sack in the game, and he's saying that he held on to the ball too long. You know, when we read these things, because we were talking earlier about Pete Carroll saying how Russ could have helped him out by hitting the checkdowns, it's foolish to think that they didn't have that conversation before. You know, and I'm sure just as Arians, you know, is criticizing Tom Brady, Pete Carroll saying this about Russell Wilson, they've already had the conversation.
Yeah, right? And you can't overreact to it because, again, it's like, is he down on Tom Brady? Well, Tom Brady has nine touchdown passes. He's had six consecutive regular season games where he's thrown for three touchdown passes or more. He's had six of seven games dating back to last year where he's thrown for over 300 yards. Where's the criticism? He's carrying a 2-0 team that now goes against the Los Angeles Rams.
Gotten multiple texts here, so I'll just make it one question about DK and how worried you are about his attitude. Basically asking, is he going to become a distraction? Is he becoming one of those kind of diva wide receivers? Where are you at with DK right now?
Right now, I mean, he's got to stop getting in the faces of the defensive backs that cover him. I mean, that's very simple because, you know, he's making mistakes. And, it's costing the team because it gets either a penalty for taunting or a penalty here or there, and he's got to stop that. You know, a pass interference, offensive pass interference, I mean, this has to stop. But I think that he's a good enough person that he will make a stop. And then, you know, Russell Wilson just has to pull him under his wing and says, hey, DK, let's slow down in this stuff. I mean, you know that Pete Carroll is working on it just like he's working with Jamal Adams and that, trying to make sure. So I think the team will respond, and I think the DK Metcalf will respond.
I think, and Dave and I talked about this, I think he could be like Breno Giacomini in that, remember, Breno was costing them because he was a hothead and he was getting penalties, and I clearly remember they were on the road, and Pete sat him down on the bench, and you could see he was giving him a stern talking to. and then shortly after that, he became a guy that became an asset with that attitude and that he would get the other guys riled up, but they would get the flags thrown on them. He knew when to sort of pull back and be the victim, and he became very good at it. That's where DK needs to get.
Yeah, agreed. And, I mean, you can see that, DK is a good person and all that stuff. It's not like, his father was an offensive lineman in the National Football League, and so, you know, he's got that. Certainly, I mean, when you look at his talent and all that stuff, I mean, he is a big-time talent. And he needs to get, you know, more downfield than he has in the first two games. And he also just got to stop making these mistakes.
Well, and you know, it's funny. It was the exact opposite last year.
Yeah.
Last year, he drew the penalties. Mm-hmm. I think it was Stephon Gilmore. Was it Kirkpatrick with the with Arizona? Darius Slay. There was one other, man, where he was able to get them fighting him. And they were the ones that got the penalties. But look, you know, like you said, John, I mean, it's good to remember that he's a good guy. He really is.
Yeah.
That's a very unselfish room with those receivers in there. And, you know, he's got Tyler Lockett to, you know, sort of be his mentor in there. And so, yeah, it's just he gets fired up. I mean, look, that's the way you should be. And when they show a shot of him and he's spitting on the ground, you can say he's swearing and stuff like that. Well, that's pretty much the mood you should be in when you're playing football.
Right, agreed. I mean, swearing on the football field?
Yeah.
I know that Derek Carr would be against that.
I saw the other day where Gruden was hugging Carr, and they were sitting there talking to each other, and I was like, yeah, he's probably cursing at him.
Oh, yeah.
John, the 360 is saying, Blair is a playmaker. Would they ever consider putting him outside at outside corner?
No. No, because he's a safety, and he's a slot cornerback. Putting him outside, I think, would he may have the speed to be able to do it, but I don't think he has the footwork to be able to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's played corner. I mean, probably in high school.
Nickel.
Out on the outside.
No. You don't want to make that kind of transition. I mean, this is the National Football League, and you're at the very best, and it's like taking a player and putting him in a position he's never been, that's tough.
Well, and I can guarantee you at least one of the catches that Trey Flowers gave up was one that I did on Football 101. It's on the linebacker. Okay, he has outside leverage, and Bobby needed to, he sucked up to the line of scrimmage, and they threw it right over his head. Two plays later, they'd run the same play, and Bobby does it right, and he doesn't, Tannehill has to bring the ball down. So a lot of the times where people are like, oh, look at that, Trey Flowers just got burned again, why is he this and that? It's like, on the touchdown to Julio Jones that wasn't.
Yeah.
Somebody was saying, well, why is Brooks covering him? Well, he wasn't. He was back in his zone, and the guy was running through his zone. So, I mean, a lot of it looks, it's not as it appears if you know who's dropping where. So.
Yeah, but, of course, I mean, it goes into the same pattern we've seen now in the last 2 years. It's like Trey Flowers makes a mistake or doesn't make a mistake. Let's get rid of Trey Flowers.
Yeah.
Same thing
with
Ken Norton Jr. I mean, say what you want about Ken Norton Jr. Look how well he did in the big plays early in the game to hold them down to field goals in the red zone.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk. Are we talking tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought there was a Mariner Day game. That's Thursday,
right?
There is, right?
But we'll talk.
All right. All right. We'll get
See
it,
John.
Through. Thanks,
okay.
John.
Thanks.
All right. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Is Thursday the day game? Okay. My bad. I thought it was tomorrow. Coming up, speaking of the Mariners, have they found a new ace? We'll talk about that next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our player spotlight will feature offensive lineman Damian Lewis. So stay tuned for that. Also, on the heels of that, El Hombre will join us for the remainder of that segment before we turn you over to the Mariners pregame show for game two of their series against the Oakland A's. And a reminder for the final homestand of the Mariners season, 710 ESPN Seattle is bringing you a chance to score $7.10 Mariners tickets for the game on Monday, September 27th. How about that? $7.10 for a Mariners ticket?
I'll be there.
They can be in the thick of this.
I'm going on Monday and Tuesday next week.
Yeah, you're sitting in different areas, though. You're highfalutin.
No, actually, not one of them.
Not one of them?
Yeah, we're only in a suite for one of them.
Oh, poor guy. Sitting amongst
I go, you know what? Our station, the Mariners, they do a great job giving us some tickets. I go once a year.
To the Diamond Club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And get my money's worth.
At the bar. Dave goes, well, I don't care about all that food. Where's the bar?
Honey, you're driving.
Well, for the common unwashed, the rest of us, Dave, yeah. $7.10 Mariner tickets for the game on September 27th. You'll have a chance for those when the Mariners host the Oakland A's. Just use the promo code 710 to redeem this special offer in the center field bleacher seats. More info at 710sports.com/events. That could be a fun series. It could be all on the line.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, there's 12 games left in this season, Dave.
I'm really excited for tonight's 12. Game. Tonight's game, man, at Oakland, that was a fun game to watch.
Tyler Anderson is...
It's unbelievable.
It's been a heck of a pickup. And we teased it by if they found their new ace. He's not an ace. It's hyperbole. But he's been rock solid, and he has been along the line. A guy that you would... When the acquisition was made, you kind of shrug your shoulders and go, all right, Picked up Tyler Anderson.
The first thing I thought is, there's a guy whose name I will forget.
Yeah, it's too common.
Yeah.
It's like Bob Smith.
Like Joe Smith. Didn't they pick up a Joe Smith?
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Smith from the Astros.
Joe Schmagegi.
Yeah, Joe Schmagegi is more memorable. But, I mean, this guy has been absolutely rock solid. He's not a. He's like Flexen. He's along those lines. Flexen and Toro and Anderson. All guys that you kind of shrugged your shoulders at,
like,
and went, all right. See what they do. Are they just are these filling guys? What are they going to do? And all three of them have been absolutely crucial to getting this team to where they are currently.
Well, You look at Tyler Anderson. His ERA right now is better in the 10 games, the 10 starts here, that he's ever had in his career. You know, some of it's maybe change of, you know, scenery.
Mm-hmm.
But what about Pete Woodward? I mean, he's done a really good job with the pitching staff. I mean, we've talked about Don and Sheffield and all that and the disappointment of Paxton. But, you know, as far as getting getting Gilbert going,
mm-hmm.
that to me is – that's a huge deal for his rookie year. I mean, the other night, that was pretty special.
He was fantastic.
Against Kansas City. So, yeah, and then, you know, Tyler Anderson, let's see if, you know, he can continue this. But, you know, with him, the combination of him and Sewald, it was just fantastic.
And he's a guy who's not overpowering, but he's just – he's got that veteran moxie. He's 31 years old,
right.
And on this team, that's ancient. You know, I mean, such a young team. But, I mean, 7 innings, 4 hits, gave up just 1 run, 1 walk, struck out 7, did it on 91 pitches. I mean, he was phenomenal last night. And, again, 31 years old, he'll be 32 in December. So he just fits what they've done. He slid right into the rotation when they've desperately needed it. I mean, just think about the rotation at the beginning of the year versus who's in it now. Who you're relying on? You feel the best about him and Flexen, you know, and Marco has turned it around. So you're feeling good about him again. But there was a good stretch where Marco was like, I don't know what we're getting out of him. Could be a dog of a game. Could be Domini. I have no idea what he was going to give you. You know, Dunn's out of there. Sheffield's now in the bullpen. Paxton was gone after 24 pitches. I mean, just talk about remaking your rotation. And Flexen's been nails throughout the season, and Tyler Anderson since he's gotten here has been fantastic. So he's a guy, I'll be curious to see what they do. He's a free agent at the end of the year. You know, I don't think you break the bank for him, but I think he's certainly, I would have to imagine behind the scenes that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais and whoever's in charge of making that call are already of the mind of, we want to try to bring him back.
Yeah, so you mentioned, you know, Flexen also. Like, do you think that there's something that they see that other people don't see, or could it be Pete Woodward, you know, or could it just be by chance, maybe one of these guys isn't, you know, what he was this year, whether it's Gilbert or
man, it's, you know,
Tyler.
What I think it's what we look at when players that used to be on this team go elsewhere and succeed, you know, whether it's Chris Taylor or anybody else that was in a Mariners uniform and we'd sit here and wring our hands about how they're not doing anything. Then they go somewhere else and they're players. Maybe that's true. Maybe the Colorado Rockies are looking at Anderson going, well, wait a minute. How come he didn't do that here? And not that he was brutal there or anything, but maybe it's just a change of scenery. Maybe for Flexen, it was, you know, a lot of things. Hey, he went and worked on mechanics, got things straightened out in the Korean Baseball League, lost 50 pounds. A lot of things went into his sort of transformation. You know, and Toro, maybe it's just about getting an opportunity because he was behind Altuve and Bregman, there wasn't a spot for him. You know, you look at, he's an infielder on the Astros roster. Where is he going to play? You know, with Bregman and Correa at short, if you ever had a thought of putting him at short, and Altuve at second, there was no room for him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe in his case, it was just about opportunity. Maybe in Flexen's case, he made some major changes physically and worked on things in another league. And Anderson is just a guy who's just kind of a veteran who's been, you know, decent and has come in here and really excelled. I mean, you got to give Jerry credit. These are three fantastic pickups.
Yeah.
Even though Toro's really been struggling as of late in the month. I think he's getting the night off tonight, which is deserved. He's hitting 173, I think, this month with a 250 on base percentage.
Who's
Toro?
That? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Does anybody else think Toro's throwing problems or his footwork? I mean, I see a lot
his
of
arm
times,
motion is kind of strange from second.
I know one that he threw wide. He didn't close his stance enough. Like his foot kind of opened up, but yeah, it does look kind of weird.
He doesn't look natural. It doesn't look comfortable for him at second.
Well, maybe he's just trying to steer it a little bit too much because, you know, he's not used to playing on that side. So, but yeah, I mean, I was going to say that it's easy to tank, you know, and not that they tank, but, you know, you do the teardown, and then you get these hot prospects that pretty much everybody generally agrees are,
right,
you know, because you've got high, you know, picks. But picking up a guy in a trade or free agency, to me, that's a little bit different, you know, and seeing something that somebody else doesn't see. And that's what Toro and Anderson so far appear to be.
And Flexen.
And Flex. Yeah, exactly. So, well, I guess I just don't count him because it wasn't, you know, that was before the season started.
Right.
But you remember when he, in spring training, he looked like he was going to maybe be a disaster. You're like, who is this guy? They basically were watching closed circuit TV, scouting him in Korea. And, yeah, he's just been maybe your most reliable,
most consistent starter this season, without question.
Yeah.
Without question. One thought from Scott Service before we hit the break here. Just his thoughts on Tyler Anderson's performance.
Another outstanding starting pitching effort. a bit easier to line up that bullpen when the starters give you seven innings. And Tyler Anderson might have been as sharp as we've seen him at any point all season long. So really excited about what he was able to do. I think the first 14 or 15 pitches of the game were all strikes, and he was on top of it. So got off to a good start. Pitch count was in check, made huge pitches, you know, throughout the game. Big double play ball there to end the seventh.
Yep, he was sharp. Great game. Desperately needed win. We'll see if they can get it done tonight in game two. Coming up, which NFL quarterback used to hold position meetings in the shower? We gave you a hint earlier in the show, but in case you missed that, you're going to find out next when we sweep the dial here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
We had our second edition of the Manning Cast last night. Bob, you forgot to watch it, I heard.
So
we pulled the best clip. I mean, Dave and John tried to reenact it. But here is actually what Peyton Manning was talking about the Patriots planting bugs everywhere when they were in New England.
I think our conversation was bugs, you know, kind of like the Patriots used to do back in the day. That second Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and they practiced at your facility all week. Were you a little nervous going back in your facility the next year that they didn't have, like, cameras in your quarterback room?
Every time I played against New England, I used to go and talk to my receivers, like, in the shower in the far corner. I'm like, don't talk about a play next to my locker, because I know it's bugged. I know it's got a hot mic in there. We're in the shower. Very strange to see seven guys hanging out back there in the shower, but take all precautions out there. Oh.
It's funny to hear him say that, and it's I thought that was more of an urban legend about some of the, you know, the rooms being the locker rooms being bugged and things like that, but Clayton seems to think it's all fact, according to the anonymous email he received.
Yeah, I don't know so much about that email.
All the names
there
were crossed out, Dave.
I like what you said. It was from the Illuminati.
Yeah.
I don't you know, it's funny. I didn't remember there being a Super Bowl in Indianapolis, but it was the Giants and the Patriots.
Yeah.
The Giants beat them. So, yeah, they're referencing there that the Patriots used the Colts facility to practice in, and so left all kinds of bugs behind everywhere. I think that's pretty funny.
And then we used to hear about them in their building blocking the frequency so that the opposing team wouldn't be able to communicate. And
that's another one we haven't mentioned, that it, like the opposing teams, the coaches' radio headsets have gone out like a number of times. In New England, there's been problems for the opposing team. And I know at least twice that's happened. Then there's also been something about filming their sidelines.
Right. We've seen that. So maybe it's all true. Maybe Belichick is an evil genius. But I think the one thing, I'm in a weird position of defending Brady, but if he was relying on all that his entire time in New England, he proved he could do it without it in Tampa Bay, unless they adopted the same scheme.
Exactly.
You know, unless they're now bugging locker rooms and everything, he's shown he can win elsewhere.
Well, and by the way, like when Rabel and I don't travel, we don't get the all 22 this year because the competition committee has decided that they don't want the all 22 video out there. I figure 90% of that is because of the Patriots.
You think so?
Well, I mean, just anybody that would you know, use it to their advantage.
Is that why it's not out there now? Because they feel like, is it giving other teams an advantage, like looking at
I have no idea. It's about as it makes as much sense as the taunting rule to me, the penalty.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, on Pro Football Talk this morning, Chris Sims was taking a look at the Seahawks-Titans game, and he isn't really sure how to feel about the Seahawks defense. He isn't feeling too good about the defense right now.
No, that's what's concerning. Again, you know, Seattle overwhelmed the Colts in week one with a lot of people at the line of scrimmage. And, of course, the Colts had problems protecting and figuring it out. And, I mean, the Colts are still having those same problems yesterday. Yeah. But even in that game last week, there was a point where I was like, ooh, wait, the emotions ran out. And the Colts are kind of moving the ball on Seattle here a little. You know, we'll watch. We're going to watch them as we go here.
Okay.
I just don't think Seattle, I mean, I have respect. They're going to hustle. They're going to hit. They're going to send waves of players at you. But I just don't know how good they are. And I feel like, you know, we got to just kind of evaluate as we go forward.
I don't think he's wrong.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
You know, you said you're not sure what to expect. I mean, you gave their average of 400-plus yards a game. We saw the start they got off to last year, and they turned things around in the second half, but I think a very credible case can be made for the opponents and the quarterbacks they were playing when things turned around as well. So it's a little disconcerting to start out that way. I still think there's a ton of talent on that side of the roster. We'll see if Norton and Pete Carroll can pull it together. We got some people that don't agree. The texter 509. Come on, give me a break. It's one game. This defense is going to be just fine. All you doubters are a joke. Go root for the Jets.
Well, look, man, you can have all the superstars you want if you don't play together. And last year they were second to last in passing yardage. Remember, they were on a pace at one point.
To set a record.
They were going to have more passing yards given up than the 13 and 14 defenses combined. So, look, that was the Legion of Boom and everything, but still.
They were on pace for an NFL record.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was two full seasons that they were going to beat. I mean, I don't disagree. I'm not pushing the panic button. I think, you know, they definitely can turn it around, but I'm just looking at as far as yards, points. They've been good against the run, but as far as passing yards, total yards, and points, over the last 2-3 years, they're basically about number 20. Number 21, number 22, somewhere in like the bottom third of the NFL.
Sweeping the dial.
That was a take you guys agreed with. I know you will not agree with this one. Stephen A. Smith says Russell Wilson is not the best quarterback in the division.
Shockingly, I'm going to tell you Kyler Murray. And I'm fully aware of the greatness of Russell Wilson. He's a future Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. He's carried the Seahawks franchise on his back. I love me some Russell Wilson. He is special. Yeah. But Kyler Murray, ladies and gentlemen, he's putting everybody on notice. He's 24 years old, okay? This brother already has passed for nearly 700 yards in two games this season, 7 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's completing over 73% of his passes. And I'm looking at this dude just make things happen.
All right.
There's somebody that is pushing the panic button.
Yeah, it's Stephen A.
Overreaction.
Smith. Yeah.
That's why, you know, he's doing that, Bob, because he knows that the Wyman and Bob show is going to pick it up and play it and
give him some
notoriety.
What do you say? I mean, it's his opinion. Okay. That's your opinion. You like Kyler Murray Barrett? I'll take Russell Wilson. Nobody's hating on Kyler Murray, especially last year. I really thought they were going to take the next step and they would be the third place team behind the Seahawks and the 49ers. That was before all the injuries and everything. But I think Kyler Murray's loaded with ability. Show me through a whole season. Be that guy. Let's see what you got. You know, but if that's his opinion, okay. I disagree with him, like most things that come out of his mouth, I disagree with.
Yeah, but look, I mean, he's thrown so far 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. You know, he's been sacked 5 times. I mean, I feel like he's not that good of a scrambler. I mean, Rasheem Green tracked him down in the open field. I like referencing that sack because it was awesome. But, you know, I'll say this, though. His completion percentage is up, you know, so far. But, you know, they've got a couple of wins under their belt. They've looked dominant. I guess I'm still waiting for him to take that step. But he's also got a rushing touchdown in each game. And remember last year talking to Pete before they played Arizona, and he said – he had like an 11-yard average per scramble.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about him is he wants to get to the sidelines, and he should go up inside. But, you know, he doesn't run inside as much, but he gets tackled a lot on the inside. When he tries to go inside, he wants to go out, but it doesn't ever get him anywhere.
All right, coming up, a double dose of guests. We got Seahawks guard Damian Lewis in our player spotlight, and then he'll be followed by El Hombre, Michael Bradley. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.